All right, class, we're back for another teacher's lounge. We're at block height 686,997, and the current price per Bitcoin is $37,118. And if you're a very ardent listener, you might hear that my voice is still pretty messed up from Bitcoin Conference. So I think we'll start off with that stuff. Jessifer, how was it meeting us all in the flesh, dude? It was my pleasure meeting you, seeing them majestic locks, and watching you make a big splash, bro. Like, you guys don't even know. Jessifer came in hot, dude. Like, this guy's damn near a celebrity now. This guy's a lightning guy. Like, dude, Jessifer, you killed it.
It was fantastic to meet you all at the conference. Like those of you that could make it out, I really appreciate it. And man, there's nothing that quite compares to getting to talk to real Bitcoiners in person, and you know, like coordinate all this. We're making globally, especially after this week. It's fantastic to meet you all.
Agreed. All right, guys, tell the people whether they should go to a conference or should they just watch it on the internet. I know a few of us were here that went. Like, I met LaRon and Shishi, Hobo. Like, yeah, jump in, dude. Echoes, Bap.
Put fire under my feet, I'll tell you that. It was motivational.
Let's go.
Yeah, I think if you're going, your question is like, should you go to the conference? Well, I mean, I barely watched any of the talks. So if your goal was to learn about different content, which like I know that some people it was like to learn and like do research and make partnerships, like maybe if that's the goal, then maybe you probably would have got it just as good watching it on YouTube. But meeting you all and the relationships that you build, and now you guys are real people to me, and like y'all were before, but now you're like real. I think like that is far outweighs any sort of educational value that you can get. So I'd say if that's your goal, absolutely.
Preach. Jim, what was your thoughts on the conference? Oh, and Abysmal, I saw you unmute yourself. Sorry. Shishi, go. One of you guys. Abysmo?
Me?
Yeah, one of you guys.
You going me?
Yeah.
Fuck it, I'm in. Let's fucking go. Yo, meeting all you guys was fucking amazing. You guys are so toxic, dude. Like, Miami couldn't handle you guys. Let's just talk about Jessifer for a second. He's a fucking legend, all right? Meeting him, he's the only guy that I actually pegged to be as nice in person as he was online. Optimus got evicted from his fucking Airbnb on the first day. They were like, get this fucking guy out of here. Get this fucking guy out. And LeRon is a fucking legend. I only knew him from the internet, and then I met him, and I'm like, wow, dude, look, you're a fucking legend. All right, we spent the whole fucking conference, you know, fucking talking Hebrew, fucking living it up. Definitely going to see all you guys again. I mean, man, I didn't meet Bap. I saw Bap, but there was too many. He's too much of a celebrity. Too many people are around him. But I wanted to meet him, but I didn't. But yeah, I mean, definitely go to a conference. I mean, I would love to draw the line in the sand. No more shitcoin stuff. Just like an only Bitcoin conference, because like, you know, people who saw the Jack Mahler speech, like it blew them away. And like, we could have way better content out there. You know, like the fact that they put Eric Voorhees right after. The fucking amazing toxic maximalist panel was just like hilarious, and it actually worked out to our benefit because we had the fuck Eric Voorhees tag go viral, right? So, you know, definitely go meet all you fucks. I mean, you guys are amazing. Like, it made me 10 times more bullish. I stacked the whole time. Every time I would talk to somebody, I would stack even harder. I didn't even eat that week, you know. Used all my food money, bro. Shit's lit.
Let's go.
Yo, she
didn't get to spend nearly as much time.
Next time.
Yeah, I didn't get to meet Bap either. Bap, I never found you. I didn't get to spend as much time with a lot of the people I did, but I met like a bunch of really cool people that I kept running into all over Miami too. And it, like you said, I've made friends that they've even said come out and visit, like the some of the people I spent like more time with come out and visit their cities or something. And there's meetups popping up like all over the place in every different city. And we had somebody at ours like visiting from Colorado or something that just knew Anastasia or something, and I don't know, somehow ended up in our group.
Yeah, man.
Are any of you all planning to go to BitBlock Boom?
Yes. Well, I got a ticket. I still got to figure out the logistics, but I'll probably see you guys there.
I'll be there.
Let's go. But yeah, dude, like I second everything everyone said. You know, I went to BitBlock Boom last year, and that's the first conference I went to. It was a lot smaller, a lot more intimate, and it was awesome to meet internet friends. And this time is the same vibe, except for this felt more like a music festival. It was a lot bigger, a lot of entertainment value, but it was super awesome to just find everyone around the Swan Lounge dome. Like I literally walk in, I look at a few stages, and I'm like, all right, like where are all the plebs gonna be? It's like, oh, they're at the Swan Lounge dome. Like, let's go over there. And literally right in front of there, everyone's just congregating, talking shit, you know, talking Bitcoin content, just meeting friends that they've been talking on the internet with for over a couple of years. And like these relationships last through the internet. It's absolutely amazing that you can make solid friendships with people by shit posting on the internet, and then you meet them in real life, and it's like you haven't skipped a beat with them. They're just as cool as they are on the internet in real life. You may get like a initial shock. It's like, oh shit, that's what you look like. You know, like I was expecting something else. You know, I had a couple of those moments where I'm like, dude, you look completely different than I thought you would. And then some you're like, oh dude, that you're like a fitting example of who I thought you'd be. And yeah, man, it was fucking epic. Miami Bitcoin 2021 was dope.
I gotta say, it was so refreshing just to like talk to people and not have to any of that other stuff. It's just where do we go from here? Like how do you want to build this new financial? It was like it was so exciting just those conversations. Tired of like, you know, defending Bitcoin's energy use. It's just, you know, like how do we want to build out Lightning Network, and you know, like, you know, what does Bitcoin mean for us? What are the next steps? Like, how's this geopolitical mess gonna move forward? It's can't be beat.
Why not? Oh, this
I guess you should.
Let's go. Yeah, Winikus, we're just talking about the conference, dude. So what were your thoughts on it? And do you encourage people to go do these Bitcoin conferences?
Yes. Good conference. Obviously there was a lot of shit coining like in a lot of areas, but I think Bitcoiners are good at finding themselves, and hopefully we can be a little more toxic for the next ones. But yeah, man, it was just a full week of fun and getting to know other people just as crazy as yourself.
Exactly, dude.
What about that baklava?
The baklava, is that what you said?
Yeah. My favorite part of the, well.
Yo, Shishi's mic is messed up.
And I think Laurent is a little bit.
What was you all's favorite presentation or panel speaker moment?
I mean, it's a tough call, but I only really saw a few presentations. So I caught the Ross Ulbricht one, which was absolutely heartbreaking, but also inspiring. So everyone go listen to that. I caught Steve Lee and the Dogecoin terrorist. which was absolutely hilarious, but also kind of like, what the fuck is happening? And then I caught the Toxic Maximalist panel, which was dope as fuck. Our very own Nico blowing up on the internet for being way too toxic. And then the best part, having Eric Voorhees basically point him out and was like, wait, did someone say if you're against Bitcoin, you're against freedom? Like, that's bullshit. And then we just start talking shit on him on the internet. Nico's on the Financial Times the next day. Like, Nico's blowing up. Simply Bitcoin started blowing up. So that was awesome to see. Literally, by the time Nico left the stage, 3 minutes till I saw him at Swan Lounge Dome, his YouTube account was blowing up. He had like 400 new subscribers. So that was awesome. And then, of course, the Jack Maulers news, you know, like that was just epic. And to see everyone outside, because I wasn't even in the dome, I walked out, but to see everyone outside that was watching it just losing their shit. There's this one dude, I don't know where he was from, he's South American or Latin American or something like that, and he was just like dancing so hard. He was like fist pumping and dancing and hooting and hollering, and everyone else is like, yeah, you know, like, dang, that was dope. But this dude was losing his shit, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, yo, like how come you're so excited? He's like, bro, did you not just hear the news? Like, we won. Like, Latin America just won, dude. Like, they just made Bitcoin legal tender. Like, America needs to catch up, dude. Like, Latin America is beating their ass right now. And I was just sitting there like, yo, like, this guy's got a point right there. So those are like the only conference or presentations I watched. I still have yet to watch the Kaiser Sailor one, but that one looked pretty entertaining. So it was all dope, dude. It was all cool. And, you know, to see Nick up there look professional as fuck, handling that moderation, it was like a proud dad moment, and we were all heckling him. So it was good times, bro. I don't know, but what about you, Bap? What'd you think?
Yo, honestly, I wasn't really listening. What was the question?
What you asked. What was your favorite presentation or moment?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, dude. The El Salvador announcement was like, I think you said, was huge. I watched a couple. I was actually surprised that I watched the Novogratz talk, and was surprised at how not disappointed I was. He didn't really get into the shitcoinery that I thought he would, which was good. I haven't watched the Pomp one yet, so TBD rules out on that.
Fuck him.
Yes. I really like the one that Matt Odell was on with Francis Puglio and Hector Rosencrantz, where they talked about like privacy and taking self-custody, and like, I think the name of the talk was like, what to do if a government bans Bitcoin, which was kind of prescient to not, you know, if you obviously not aware that the next day a country was going to announce it. So I'm interested to see how that talk evolved, like the general talk evolves afterward, and just reading Twitter. But yeah, Jack Dorsey did it, you know. I think my biggest takeaway for him is that I don't think Jack Dorsey's evil. I've kind of been on the fence for a minute now, but it seems to me like he's really pushing Twitter to become open source with this blue sky that they're offering. And I think, at least from my interpretation of his talk, Twitter is so much bigger than him now. I mean, he has no control over it. And
he was watching the presidential shit last night, I'll tell you that. He was in the room.
Yeah, he was. He retweeted it too. And so I think, like, when he said that he would, you know, without Square, I can't remember the exact words, but he basically said that Bitcoin was like the most important thing he could work on in his life. And he was very specific about Bitcoin. And he echoed that in his talk, where he said, like, he just kept talking about Bitcoin. And I noticed he doesn't use the word crypto, although Square Crypto is their name of their company. So I think, like, that was a pretty positive message, and obviously seeing the talk last night with the with the president of El Salvador on Twitter. It is reassuring. But overall, great. I'm excited to see how BitBlock Boom comes out because, like you said, Optimus is there was a, or I think Weineke said there's a lot of shitcoinery out there. But that's, you know, it makes it fun. But BitBlock Boom is a more Bitcoin only conference, to my understanding.
Yep. Go, Shishi.
Dude. Okay, so Michael Saylor killed it. You should definitely watch that one. You know, all the hate that Max Keiser is getting, like, clearly no one's ever watched Max Keiser because he was just like himself. So I guess that was a shock for people that Max Keiser exists at all. But Michael Saylor killed it. He spoke about how productive his employees became after he adopted Bitcoin and how he almost retired. And it was cool. It was super cool. I mean, like, Nick, not Nico, but like Nick Cantmine, he did such a good job, like, on the panel, and he had a great quote that I fucking love. And it was like, we either have Bitcoin or we have communism. And then Nico hit it hard. And then Dr. Bitcoin, I mean, you guys should definitely watch that if you haven't. But that whole panel was way, I was like nervous about it, you know, but it came out so fucking good. And I'm so fucking proud to have interacted with every one of those fucks.
Facts. All right, guys. Well, anyone got a special shout out for a presentation? And then if not, we can transfer into some of the big news that came out during the conference.
Can I tell my story?
Yeah, go, Jim.
Is your voice back, Jim?
It's not back all the way yet. I showed up on the 1st, so I had 3 days in town before the conference, and my first night was at a private dinner with like 8 people, including Francis Pouliot and Alex Vetsky, Proof of Steph, Katie the Russian, Al's Lacrosse, Beef or Bacon. I mean, all people I knew, some of which I'd never met. So it was like family reunion, really casual, quiet. We got to talk. And then I had to drive. I was designated driver because I don't drink. So I'm driving these guys around. Francis has to check into his hotel room. It was like a comedy because we're just having fun, but things aren't going well. And it took us like 2 hours to get to a bar. Alex Vetsky's like 4 hours late from the time he told everybody to meet him there. But it was very frustrating. But when we got there, there was like 150 Bitcoiners, and we knew most of them. And it was like this giant family reunion. So that's the first night, home at like 3:30. Second day was like BitDev's meeting early in the day, then the beefsteak at night. So another super late night, same kind of thing, just meeting tons and tons of people. Next day was Katie's event during the day, and then the pleb party at night. So another really long day. But at 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 nights in a row for me. I hadn't done that in like 30 years. But every night, you know, finding more and more people that you've known from the internet, you've had tweets back and forth with for years, you know what they look like, or in many cases you don't. And some of you guys, you know, I got to meet Weinikus. I didn't get to talk to Laron because he was sitting behind me when we were watching the Toxic Plebs, which is awesome because we got right near the front row. We were cheering those guys on hard, which is really cool. It's just like, it's all about the relationships. It's all about the socializing. It was just nonstop hanging out with really cool people, ideologically aligned with each other. It's like we could finish each other's sentences. This is something that people can't grasp. I think everybody I know in this space that I gravitate towards feels exactly like me. I think everybody on this call feels the same way. There's something about this unity that Bitcoin brings to people, because I want to say it's because we all know it's fair. No one can cheat. We're on this. Everybody's playing with the same fair deck of cards, the same fair set of dice. I don't know how you want to use an analogy to describe it, but like, this is something humanity's never really seen before. And it, like I said, it levels the playing field, and it allows you to understand that, you know, you could make it by adopting this in ways that, you know, we have incredible advantages over millions of people on this planet that have no clue what's going on. We're so far ahead of them. You know, we say all the time, we're early, and we fully are early, and this thing's not going to go away. So, you know, you start to figure this out, you get ideologically aligned with the people that understand it and they explain it well, and then it just makes so much sense that you can't turn away. You have to align yourself with this so you won't feel right. It won't feel right. Once you understand it, it's like you're compelled because it only makes sense. It's the fairest thing. It's the best thing. It's going to help everybody and it's going to help you. You know, it helps us individually. The game theory and the whole thing, the way it was put together, aligns with everybody at every level within the Bitcoin ecosystem. So everybody really that sees it doesn't want it to break. We all want it to keep working. It's just such an amazing, amazing invention. So, you know, I could talk all night about it. I'm as bullish as they come. And I don't care how much shitcoinery was going on there. I literally just didn't feel it because I was just hanging out with toxic Bitcoiners the whole time. And there was so many of them that it wasn't hard. And it's worth it. Oh, and one last thing. BitBlock Boom is sold out. It's one of the best conferences for sure. I've been there twice. It's great having a small crowd. You get to talk to people for long periods of time. Whereas this conference, I had like, you know, 1 minute with some people that I would have talked to for 2 hours. And never saw him again for 2 more days, you know. So very frustrating because it was way too big, and you just couldn't put the amount of time that you would want to. But even if you can't get into BitBlock Boom conference, it's in one hotel where pretty much everybody stays at the same hotel. That means everybody's always hanging out around the hotel for days. This ticket system side event still. Honestly, it's worth getting a ticket and going. And if you can't get into the actual talks, you could sit in the bar area and guarantee there's going to be some other people hanging out there you can bullshit with all day long. And you could probably watch the thing on like your phone or a laptop from literally, you know, the other room. It's down the hallway and it's all going on. And you're going to interact with so many people hanging out at the pool, going out to dinner, going out to breakfast. That's where all the value is. You know, you could learn all this stuff. You can watch the talks later on YouTube and learn as much as you need to learn. But you can't make friends over the internet like you can in person. You can make the friends, of course, but once you meet in person, it changes everything. So this is life, folks. This is living life. You're out there enjoying yourself and feeling like your life matters and that you're doing something worthy. And like, what else are you going to do with your freaking life? What are you going to just sit home? You can stack sats all you want, but you're going to miss out on some life if you don't, you know, spend some money and go and enjoy some friends and, you know, and you never know where it could take you. I mean, people are getting jobs. People are making, you know, connections, careers out of going to these conferences. You have no idea who you're going to meet and what it could turn into. No idea. So this is beyond worth it. I can't say enough about going to conferences and meeting the people that you're ideologically aligned with. I'm sorry. I think I've said enough. Thank you very much.
No, I'd agree with Jim 100% for BitBlock Boom. It's an epic conference, and most of the real meat happened outside of the conference. You're in the hallways, you're in the bars, you're getting food with Bitcoiners, and that's basically why you're going. You're going for the relationships because, let's be honest, unless you're extremely new to Bitcoin, everything they're saying on stage, you've probably heard before, and if you haven't heard it before, you can rewatch it and restream it on the internet. But you can't recreate the relationships and the in real life contact with Bitcoiners because that it's just you don't get that in your real life unless you have Bitcoiners around you. And that's the most important part is like feeling Bitcoiners and feeling their energy and understanding that, wow, these guys are just as convicted as I am. You know, we're all the same level of batshit crazy. And it's electrifying when you're around so many convicted Bitcoiners. And when the conviction is that high, you just come out even more bullish than you were before. So, you know, even just think about showing up, even if you can't get a ticket. And I'm sure, you know, we'll be hanging out and you'll see all the people you want to see and get some food with the people that you never thought you would. So it's a crazy time, man. Bitcoiners are awesome.
I'm going to jump in and, I guess, transition us a little bit because all right, one of the big outcomes of the conference, I think, is just Nivismo said we aligned shock. But just coming out of the conference, and now we've got that huge news about El Salvador adopting Bitcoin as a legal tender. And, you know, last night listening into Twitter Spaces, president of El Salvador joined Nick Carter, like his Twitter space, to kind of like give coverage to like them actually signing this bill into law. It was incredible, and I think just like that energy from the conference and like how we pretty much all synced up as Bitcoiners to like deliver a line of questioning to the president of El Salvador, like how this is going to roll out and what the next steps are. It was really incredible to listen to, and I think the conference played a big role in bringing everybody together.
Awesome segue. Go, Shishi.
So one of the things that no one mentioned about the spaces was that he was so addicted talking to us that he almost missed the vote. His brother, Kareem, was like, hey, man, by the way, like the vote's about to happen. He's like, oh, shit, it just bounced, you know? And that was so bullish, man, on Bitcoiners. Like, whoever says toxic maximalism isn't a feature is just Eric Voorhees, bro.
Hey, I didn't know that was his brother. I heard the recording, but I didn't hear him get introduced. And that was, it was very interesting because it was in real time. They were waiting for the vote. And like he got kicked off. Something happened with his connection. He had to come back on. And he's like waiting to be brought back up on stage or something. And they're all talking like, come on, Nick, what are you doing? Get him up there. It was so much like us just fumbling through like, oh, he comes back on. And he goes, oh, sorry, I hit the wrong button. It's like there's nobody handling the guy. You know, he's being real. It's amazing to see, actually. And as long as he stays that way. Hey, let's maybe bring up a technical side. Anybody listen to or pay attention to what he's talking about how are they going to deal with Bitcoin as a government and how they're going to help facilitate the ability for small people, like the small business owners and people that don't have, you know, computers and can't run their own nodes and maybe don't even have the capacity to handle their own wallets. Anybody understand? Like, I know what I heard, but I'm just curious if anybody wants to, like, chime in about what he said about how they're going to set up their, he called it a trust fund to hold Bitcoin or to start out with dollars and then buy people's Bitcoin that need to transact in something other than Bitcoin so they can pay their own bills. And it sounded interesting. Like somebody like Justin or somebody that knows the technical stuff, anybody else that's in here that might know, I'd be curious to hear your feedback on how his description on how the government is going to handle owning and using and transacting with Bitcoin.
Yeah, Jim,
just to comment on that. It was complicated. Oh, go ahead, Bab.
They're going to be using Strike, and the way Strike works is basically give them a QR code invoice, whether it's on Lightning. I imagine based on the response, they said 98% of the transactions in El Zante are Lightning. So you give them a Lightning invoice code, and the way Strike's infrastructure works is it receive dollars in your wallet right away in your Strike account. So I imagine they'll have some sort of maybe state branded Strike version that merchants will be able to use that'll allow people to pay and receive both on chain and off chain with Lightning. And the president was very, very pointed to mention that they will not be the only wallet. And so it sounded like the Strike and government trust was really there to be more of a transitory facility, at least for now, though they didn't specify like a end date, and encourage people to take their long-term savings that are in Strike, which are in dollars, and withdraw those to a wallet that they control, the person themselves. And when they withdraw it from Strike, where it's in dollars, it'll withdraw it to a Bitcoin wallet and convert it to Bitcoin at that moment. So the conversion of dollars to Bitcoin and Bitcoin to dollars on both the send and receive side are going to be facilitated through the Strike app, which I have mixed feelings about just because it seems like a lot of, you know, trust and concentration on them. But as far as I know, that's how they're going to be building it out. And they're going to be taking that money to repay that and keep that facility revolving. So as they accumulate Bitcoin, they will sell those off to keep the balance. But he didn't specify a percentage ratio or anything like that.
The president was talking $150 million denominated trust fund. And there was, let's see, this is standing, but what I gathered was that they, that the country was actually taking on some like Bitcoin price speculation risk by setting that up. And it was so we'll see how that shakes out. You're going to need someone to digest all that information and the implications that that has.
Yeah, so I think the way that that's going to happen, because if they have a government like back end wallet, right, Strike has to have Lightning on the back end. And so if you are a El Salvadoran citizen and you're paying a merchant and you pay them with Bitcoin, someone's got to teach you on the end of that trade. And so the funding on their end is probably going to be the government wallet. And that's where the dollars will live. I imagine just based on, I was thinking about that.
Yeah, so he also mentioned. Sorry.
Go ahead. Sorry. No, go ahead.
All right. So BAP hit it right on the head, where they're just going to use that to liquidate people who don't, like merchants who don't want to hold Bitcoin. And then the government will just take on the fluctuation risk, which is very smart, actually, to gain that initial adoption without having like upheaval, right? It's very smooth. It doesn't change the merchant's like ability to transact and whatever they want. But he also said something so bullish where he was like, one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin. Those were his exact words. And he wants to get to a point where people are not referring to the fiat value and just talking in sats and talking in Bitcoin. And I think that was just so bullish. He said it like 10 times, like, we can't control it. We don't want to control it. We just want to like produce like something that will catalyze adoption fast. And they were talking about how much money they wanted to invest in infrastructure and connecting the whole country to the internet and stuff like that, you know? So, I mean, these guys are so intelligent, and I'm shocked how coherent, how much they know. He referenced Bitcoin Beach maybe like 50 times. So he's basing his model off of like a proven model, which we can go and look at, because I'm not too familiar with Bitcoin Beach. I hope someone here is, maybe Bab, Jessifer, Optu, whoever, you know. But he mentioned that like 50 times. But yeah, so fucking bullish, man. It's crazy.
Yeah. So let me add to that. One of the things he said about taking on risk. So he was describing how merchants and people that have very little money have to transact, like, so their default currency is the dollar. So a lot of people want the dollar, they want to use it. And it's the idea that it's a slow adoption curve. People have to learn to understand that there's this thing called Bitcoin and you might want it. But in the end, they still might either feel comfortable or just need to use dollars. And they're saying they'll take on the fluctuation risk so that what he said was, what if the merchant has $10 worth of bananas to sell, to them, it's whatever the price of Bitcoin is, they will take Bitcoin that was sent to them, say, you're going to pay through Strike, through this merchant. They receive Bitcoin, but they don't want Bitcoin. They want dollars in their wallet. So the government will say, fine, we will replace that amount of Bitcoin for the $10 you charge in real dollars. And we don't care if we are only getting $9 for our Bitcoin. So if the price went down, we have to sell it and get $9 to give to you, but we'll take the risk. And what he literally said was, there's times we understand that we could profit by this and other times where we could lose money on this. And the way we're doing is we're starting out by putting $150 million in a trust fund. So it starts with dollars. He literally described this whole thing. It's fascinating to listen to. And he says how, you know, we are immediately ready to purchase people's Bitcoin that don't or can't hold it. And he said they would facilitate basically providing people with cell phones with government wallets, okay? And he fully admitted this is, the idea is this is no restrictions. You don't have to use their wallet. It's just them them giving people the opportunity. So it's basically custodial where they can get on this network, choose to use the dollars, the Bitcoin, or whatever other currency they might use within that country. I don't even know that part. The idea being that it can onboard people to the electronic economy. They don't need physical cash anymore. But if they ever wanted to opt out of what we all know is fiat money, so the dollar or any other government currency, there's Bitcoin right there at the push of a button once they understand it. And eventually they can migrate to their own wallet. They can take full custody of it, get off the Lightning Network, the whole thing. So they'll use the Lightning Network to facilitate everything until people say, you know what, I just want to hold this myself. And then they'll get it out of a channel to figure out where, all through Strike, exactly. Jack's got it all figured out already. The merchant or customer, whoever it is, says, no, don't convert it to dollars. Leave it in my wallet as Bitcoin. And it just, Jack runs it through his Strike network and it stays as Bitcoin. And Jack even describes it. They take whatever tax hit, arbitrage, opportunity or miss. They handle all that because they're traders. He comes from a family of traders. They know how to set up the movement of funds in such a way that they can benefit, always making money on the movement of funds, whether the price is going up or down, through options and futures and all kinds of stuff. So it's very complicated in the back end, but it allows people at the front end to just push a button and you either receive it in one type of currency or the other, or you send it in one type of currency or the other. And so I think Jack went down there and fully red-pilled the president to the extent that he almost could just say what I just said. Like, he knows how Strike works. He understands what the people are getting when they get this thing. And I think Jack's helping him to create the rails for the government-based wallet so that it will interact with Strike perfectly, but always allow people to get out and take it for themselves. Jack would never get involved if it couldn't allow the people to be free if they want to be. And the president pretty much articulated it like that, which I gave him a lot of credit for. So far, I see no major red flags in what he said. Certainly very bullish, in my opinion. And the world is hearing this. Like, there's people all over the world that heard what I heard today. It was 2 in the morning for me, so I didn't hear it live. I get up in the morning and Twitter's like blown up. What the hell did the guy say? And I was so happy to find the recording. So everybody should go listen to it. This is the president of a country that's recognized across the world, even though it's a tiny country. And they got one of the coolest things going. They got volcanoes, and he's talking about it already, how they're going to start mining Bitcoin with the most purest form of non-polluting energy there is, steam from hot water. It's like amazing. This guy's got it so well. He's going to make El Salvador one of the richest countries on the planet. This guy, I think he totally gets it at this point. Like I said, I see no red flags with this guy. I think he's so red-pilled. He's
What's
fully one of us,
beautiful
which is
too,
so
though, he
cool.
picks Jack. He picked Jack instead of like some other corrupt piece of shit or anybody else. He picked
Oh,
Jack and Strike.
totally.
It's like awesome.
He's got the best guy for the job. And I think this president is like 39, and Jack's like 28 or something. And so these guys are close in age, both very young. But like I said, this could change this country so much for everybody in it, and then it will just ripple out to every other country. It's just this is the first domino right here in a sense. Very, this is world history, life changing stuff. It's amazing how, I mean, that's how I see it, but I still think most of the world goes, eh, whatever. Like Bitcoin, El Salvador, drug money, they got gangs down there, whatever. Who knows what the narrative is out there in the crazy mainstream world, but. They're going to have to deal with it one day, like everybody gets into Bitcoin at the price they deserve, right? So maybe it's when Bitcoin's $1 million that they finally capitulate, 10 years from now or something. But this is world-changing history right here, folks. I'm sorry.
Agreed.
Hey, I have a question
Go
for the
ahead.
group.
Shoot it.
So I'm not trying to be like, too cynical or anything like that, but politicians are generally people who lie. This guy seems cool. El Salvador has 6.5 million people. So, I'm sure you can do a lot more with that small of a country. But here's my question. So at what point do you think the big countries, because they don't even have a central bank, at what point are the countries with the central banks going to join? And sorry about the noise. I'm outside on a run right now.
Put me in for this one. I'm in. Let's fucking go.
Let's fucking go, dude.
All right. So, first of all, I think like this is a game of dominoes. And like there's a reason the smallest country that doesn't have their own fiat currency printer adopted it first, right? It's very basic for them. They're like, all right, I can slowly move over to Bitcoin. It's perfect timing. The acceptance across the board has risen. It gained legitimacy over the last 4-year cycle. and there's no more excuses not to. Like, why are you using the U.S. dollar? Like, give me one good fucking reason. I mean, you know, if the United States in the pandemic was like, you know what, we're not debasing because we're the world trade currency, whatever, you know, like, that would have been great. But they didn't do that. And, like, if you're a country sitting there and you're like, wow, they're just printing us to oblivion, like, what's the point? Right? Like, why not just, like, slowly do it? And which country do I think will do it first? Well, I think the Eurozone is fucked. Like, the way they set that up is just fucked. And, like, you're telling me people aren't going to start breaking off and being like, fuck it. Well, why are we using the euro when we can just use Bitcoin? Like, fuck you, you know? And, like, I don't know. I think it's going to be some European country from, like, the developed world. But I think the developing world is prime. They're going to show the use case for it. And then it's going to continue to develop. You know, I think, you know, I would love if someone could speak about Bitcoin Beach, because I feel like that would answer. I don't know who just spoke. I don't know their handle. I wish I did, but. Whoever just asked that question, you know, if anyone knows about Bitcoin Beach, I feel like that would give us an inclination as to like how, where, when, why. But
I can tell you some stuff about it. Basically, some people figured out. So an American guy, I think he said 17 years he's been living there. He was on the call last night with the president. He is one of the guys who really got it going. Basically, he started to understand it. He started to convince people down there to receive it for remittances and hold it to save it. And, you know, just the tiniest little economy. And it just caught on in one little town, and they created a circular economy. It's like the whole town started using Lightning. And, you know, when they're trading amongst themselves and they're not trading outside their sphere, it just works. But when Jack got involved, when they have to bring in goods from outside, when they have to trade with other people and they have to transition out of Bitcoin, they just use Strike backwards, and it turns it, and it pays the other person in the money they're looking for, and they don't even know. So they're fully connected, and they got this little circular economy going, and they're all using Bitcoin. And the outside world doesn't care, doesn't know, and it doesn't matter, but they love it. And the amount that they get to save, they watch it go up in value, and go, this is the best thing ever. So this tiny little surf town just got it going. That's literally it. And Jack went down there to make sure. Like, so, you know, he heard about it, then he went to visit, and then he started working, came home, worked on. I think I'm pretty sure he went there twice, but I know he went there and he said, oh, I got to help these people. I got to make sure this works well. And he did everything he had to do. And, you know, the last time he was down there last month, he was down there for weeks and weeks. It's probably the whole, you know, that's when he met the president and they talked about this announcement they were going to make. I'm sure it was a lot of planning involved. But yeah, I mean, it's a grassroots thing. And this is what humanity does. You know, groups of people decide we want this. Let's just all band together and make it happen for us. And we don't care about anybody else. And whether it's, you know, let's go dig a well for our community so we all have water. Let's build a dam so we can get electricity just for us in the next 100 miles. You know, like, this is what people do. We just do stuff to help each other, help ourselves and help the people around us. And it's literally the story of humanity. And it's happening around the best form of money we've ever seen, a brand new protocol for money. And we're watching it in real time. It's the most fascinating thing, you know, and it's happening fast, too, because we have the internet. Knowledge goes around the world at light speed. It used to take, you know, decades or centuries for some information to get to the other side of the planet, you know. So this is just amazing, the whole thing. I could talk all night. I got to shut up. There's too many people here that should talk. Thanks, guys.
No, I mean, you guys are right. Like, I caught some of the spaces last night and was like bullish. I was sitting there like, man, El Salvador's president is based as fuck. Like, he gets it. And there has been some, you know, some cynicism and some naysayers. And I think, you know, rightly so. We are all very skeptical of politicians, which we probably should be, and bankers and the likes. And so, you know, I think it's only right that we kind of are a little skeptical of it. But just from hearing him talk to us and in real time, it was pretty amazing to just hear him, you know, sound just like one of us. And there, you know, it's not, I can't be for sure, completely sure that he didn't have someone kind of coaching some of his words, but in real time he sounded exactly like one of us. He was red pilled as fuck or orange pilled as fuck, and he was just like spitballing, you know, like the volcano mining idea happened during the spaces, and then this morning he comes out and it's like, yeah, I put it into action. Let's see what happens with mining, with volcanoes. And it's just, dude, I don't know, man. The dominoes seem to be falling, and it's only been, what, like 4 days since the announcement, and now we have something around like 8 different Latin American countries talking about doing something similar, from congressmen, senators, junior politicians, and the game theory is unraveling, and I think it was Jim earlier. The game theory is unraveling, and it's happening into real time. Actually, I was listening to Guy Swan. He's like, it's no longer game theory. It's in reality. So, you know, the end of the year is going to be absolutely bananas if it continues to unravel how it has been this last week, and the price movement is going to be absolutely bullish, and, you know, like, death to all the bears out there, because they don't know what's coming, dude. Like, the tidal wave is actually coming, and anyone selling their Bitcoin right now, it just doesn't know what's going on. And, you know, like, shouts out to all you guys that are still stacking, still bullish, still devouring the content, still shit posting and creating content. So, you know, like, this is a win by Jack Mallers, but I feel, you know, it's a win for everyone in the community that's been very consistent in their messaging and, you know, spreading the Bitcoin ethos. So it's like Bitcoin won, dude. It's not over, and the fight isn't over, but it's like, dude, the tendrils are sinking in, and people can't ignore us anymore. And, you know, people can make fun of Bitcoiners and Bitcoin in general, but, like, they just don't know what's about to hit them, and economic reality is real, and Bitcoin is showing us that right now in real time. And, like, I say it all the time, it's just amazing to be in the front row watching this happen in real time, because it blows me away. Because, man, just hearing the president, and I liked how everyone's like calling him El Presidente. So it was just, it's so funny, dude. Like, Bitcoin memes are absolutely hilarious, and it's just crazy how we can take over countries, you know, and take over the world. So it's going to be a bullish end of the year. Weinekes, jump in. I see you're unmuted.
I just wanted to give a let's go.
Let's go.
I just saw a funny tweet, and it said, I finally know where El Salvador is on a map. Bitcoin fixes this.
Oh, yeah. It was so crazy just to listen into that. He got asked that question about, well, do you have a plan for mining Bitcoin in your country? He's like, no, I don't. But we have a lot of geothermal. You know, that's like, that's, you know, pretty much renewable energy. Like, in the morning, he's like, to the president of La GeoSV, our state-owned geothermal electric company, to put up a plan to offer Bitcoin mining 100% renewable, zero emissions energy, our volcano. And then following that up with saying, our engineers just informed me that will provide approximately 95 megawatts of clean, zero emissions geothermal energy from our volcanoes, starting to design a full Bitcoin mining hub. Yeah. I can't believe that I got to witness that old, and in a matter of hours. It's like, it's less than a day, and an entire country is starting to allocate its resources towards realizing that Bitcoin is the future, and we need to build infrastructure for this. And I don't need to trust the politician as much as I just can rely on the incentives, because as soon as realizes the incredible geothermal potential thing on from volcanoes, this is a science fiction future that we're going to realize. And I couldn't be more bullish. That this is like a super exciting moment, and I can't state that enough.
Yo, Elon, who, you know, like, step down, buddy.
Can you please tell Elon to shut the fuck up? Thanks.
Oh man, I love it. I love how Pleb's still dunking on these feet.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Shoot it.
Can I ask you guys a question? Is Justifer actually Satoshi?
I'm definitely not Satoshi.
That's what Satoshi would say, though. Just saying.
Oh man. Okay. All right, guys. I do kind of want to play Deadpool's advocate for a moment on one point in the bill. So the bill passed last night, and while it's super bullish and I'm very excited about it, I forget what article it is, but it kind of, you know, like if you take it to its extreme, it sounds kind of bad. But maybe that's just like the paranoid thinking and it's kind of going around Twitter. But the like forced legal tender laws of Bitcoin, where merchants might be forced to use Bitcoin. What are your guys' thoughts on that? Are we looking into it a little too much, or is it just, you know, like part of the, you know, the rhetoric that would go into the law?
It's in the law, the actual wording, and I was concerned about it until I heard what the president said. That was what I was describing before, that if you didn't
it makes Elon Musk to gonna have Bitcoin. To buy Bitcoin and use Bitcoin if he wants to sell them in El Salvador.
For sure. All right, Jin, continue.
Well, they don't have to accept Bitcoin because they can instantly converted to dollars, or that price risk is taken on that, and the ability for them to accept it is what I understand going to be provided to them by Basic App.
Exactly. So it's not nobody's hurt by it if it plays out the way he described it, that they're being said they have to take it, but they're not being said they're not being told they have to keep it, and they're not being told they have to denominate in it, because the government is saying, we will give you dollars at the rate that you were selling something, the agreed upon dollar rate, in whatever amount of Bitcoin you give us. We'll give it to you back in dollars, and you never have to really keep it in. You have to give somebody else the ability to spend their Bitcoin through you. That's the reason it's forced on them. But if he does it well enough, it might be such that nobody's hurt by it. I don't like the idea that anything's forced, of course. But the government's got all kinds of rules. It's not going to go away anytime soon. But the idea that they would facilitate in such a way that the person never takes any risk, if it actually plays out that way, seems about as fair as you can make it. So,
agreed.
Some kind of trade-off.
Agreed, 100%.
So it's actually super bullish because it protects the citizens over the corporations. And usually that is not the case with legislation, right? They're trying to attract biz. And I think that's super bullish because, like, you know, if Tesla goes, okay, we don't want to, you know, collect Bitcoin for Teslas because of some energy FUD, you know, they can't do that in El Salvador. And I think that sets a precedent, you know, and the fact that they're protecting their citizens, it really is a model for South America, man. Like, it's so bullish, dude. It's
and to the fact that I think he's smart enough to know that for all those people that are too stupid to keep the Bitcoin and they need, you know, like, don't force me to keep this Bitcoin. Here, you take it. He'll go, no problem, dude. Here's some dollars. We got plenty of them. I mean, I think he's smart enough to realize, yeah, we'll take as many as you don't want. And he's not forcing it on anybody. He's just going, like, rubbing his hands together, like, those idiots. I'm letting them be free and they're giving up the sacks to me. Okay, whatever. I'll take them. I don't know. It's like hilarious when you really think it through. I think he really gets it. And, you know, they're going to start Bitcoin mining on free geothermal energy that's right under the ground. He just goes, like, the guy totally gets it. So he's gonna make his country wealthy. He'll probably make himself wealthy as well. But all the politicians do that already. So it's not like he really blamed the guy. But if he does it in a fair enough way, I mean, everybody deserves to get paid to bring value to the marketplace. If he brings value to millions of citizens and helps them become free, the guy deserves to be a billionaire as far as I'm concerned. If you're not hurting people and you're bringing value to them, you deserve to get paid really well. I'm sorry. That's the way the world's supposed to work.
Agreed.
I think it really also flips. Something underrated really quick, and I'm out, is that all debts will be payable in BTC as well. So that was huge, and that's why they put that law in, because if not, like, banks could circumvent it, and, like, it just protects the population, man. It's awesome.
Just saying, there's a couple of things that it really flips the script on. So one is financial censorship. You know, the idea that, you know, a company like Marathon would start censoring transactions that it didn't think was appropriate. I mean, think of the social justice of that. You know, someone in the U.S. from a privileged position is going to say, we don't think this transaction should be processed by the Bitcoin network. And, you know, that's someone saying that, you know, I don't think your transaction in El Salvador, you know, dirty old El Salvador, should get processed. I mean, shame on that. Like, you should absolutely. And all of those transactions, as long as you are paying the fee, those should get processed. The other thing that it flips the script on is that Bitcoin is now a foreign currency.
And
I'm waiting for that plays out as far as, you know, the tax for the U.S. because, you know, as a digital asset, like they can charge cap on that. But as a foreign currency, there are exemptions for that. So I'm waiting to see how this plays out, whether the U.S. is a smart move and treat it as a foreign currency that should not be taxed under capital gain. This is a foreign currency.
Yeah, Jesper, I was going to bring up that exact point. Like, watching the game theory play out from here on out is going to be absolutely beautiful because, like you said, you know, now, according to our laws, America, the United States has to view, well, they don't have to, but according to the law as written, Bitcoin is considered a foreign currency. And the implications of that for all of us as Bitcoiners is huge. And so if these other Latin American countries follow suit quickly, because, I mean, it took him, what, like a day? I'm sure they were drafting this legislation for a while, but it took him basically a day to push it through. So if the dominoes fall as quickly for these other countries, then the pressure is going to be on for us and all those haters on Twitter and mainstream media telling us that we're criminals and our money is a Ponzi. And, you know, like even Trump came out this week and said that Bitcoin's a Ponzi and it's a currency battling with a dollar. And someone pointed out, it's like, yeah, you guys heard Bitcoin's a Ponzi, and I heard Trump say Bitcoin is a currency. So already, you know, our memes are infiltrating their rhetoric, and like it's going to be really, really interesting to watch this play out for the next couple of months, because, you know, now it's where we've all been saying for a long time, you know, soon nation states are going to adopt it. And then furthermore, soon they'll consider it as just money and not as an investment or a commodity that needs to be capital or gain or taxed with capital gains. So this is an interesting interesting time to be alive. And this next couple of weeks is going to be bullish as fuck, guys. Like, it's crazy. It's happening so fast, gradually, then suddenly, guys. And to make it through all the FUD that we've made it through, and to know that the FUD's only going to get stronger, it's kind of getting me fired up. It's like, dude, like, bring me all the FUD. Like, all your FUD is mine, because Bitcoin's just going to topple one stone after another, and we're watching it in real time. So it's absolutely beautiful to watch.
Man, I also wonder what the implications of this as far as, like, their safety goes. Because, you know, Paul Krugman said U.S. dollar is backed by men with guns. And that's just going to be interesting. You know, it's not a big country. It's in kind of a, you know, like, kind of a hot zone. Venezuela's kind of close. Latin America in general has had kind of crazy politics. So that's another factor that I'm sure they're going to be considering. you know, national safety.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you guys said a bunch of interesting shit, so I'll hit it all. I think Trump saying that about Bitcoin gives Biden the opportunity for a layup. Let's see if he's coherent enough to take it. I think South America, like men with guns, like that's all changing, man. Like the information age is just going to change everything. Like legal tender laws, Bitcoin, you know, the Trojan horse is in. We're in.
Let's go. Let's hope they hate Trump so much that they consider Bitcoin legal tender here too. I saw someone's tweet. It was like, you get the left mad with environmental FUD, you get conservatives mad with Trump calling it a Ponzi, and then just like all this bullish news comes out and it's just like, yeah, what are you guys even talking about?
By the way, that was Untapped Growth, right?
I think that wrote that tweet. I think so.
Yeah, it was. What? Shout out Untapped Growth. Meeting him was a pleasure. Forgot to say, shout out Surfer Jim. Meeting him was a fucking pleasure. Yeah.
Yeah, what's up? That was great meeting all you guys for sure.
Bullish on Bitcoiners. Bullish on Bitcoiners.
Dude, I'm so bullish on Bitcoiners. Meeting Optimus was a fucking trip, man. We ate fucking food. Fucking cultured him with a Nutella crepe, dude. Like, he ate Jessifer's last piece, dude. Like, yo, he cut it in half, offered Jessifer a piece, and then just fucking ate it. And
no,
Jessifer was
no.
livid. You ever seen Jessifer pissed? Yeah,
That's not what happened. That's not what happened, dude. I cut it in half. And then you told me, like, yo, just eat it all. And I like, looked around, and no one wanted it. And then literally right when I eat it, Jessica looks at me. He's like, dude, I wanted that piece. I'm like, oh, man. Whatever. I guess it did. Yeah, I guess it did happen like that, but not exactly.
So I guess I doxed Jessica again, huh? Fuck.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Again.
This is ridiculous. Anyways.
A fun thing for
like for like 2 hours, like fascinating conversations of the entire conference, I think, to me, because we were talking about how fragile the food systems are and how close we came to an absolute wrecking ball hitting all of our food systems, like when the Suez Canal got blocked. Because it was disrupting the flow of all of these artificial, you know, fertilizers that like keep our food systems going right now. Like the stuff that Untapped Growth is doing is going to like maybe save us from this disaster.
Not maybe, bro.
Just the simplicity of what he's creating just by organizing ranchers, Wall Street speculators that want to have a major collapse, which we are just tempting fate by ignoring all the volatility and doing these please follow Untapped Growth. That was an amazing conversation.
Yo. It was great meeting all you sickos in here, but I also got to meet the legend, Greg Zadge, and Chairforce, LaserX100K, and just memeing in real life with them was a good time.
Dude, straight up. Hey, bro, when I met Greg and Chairforce, it was during Preston's pub crawl, and I like turn around and I'm like, oh shit, that's Greg. And Greg's like, yo, do you meet Chairforce yet? And I'm like, no, dude, where is he? He's like, he's right here, dude. He's literally like on the other side of you. And so we're all talking, we're all shooting the shit. And this dude comes up and he happens to be a Dogetard. Like, he's balls deep in Doge. He said something like, I only have like $100 in Bitcoin, but I'm deep in Doge. And me, Greg, and Chairforce were just trolling him in real time, like memeing him with the most ridiculous stuff, and it was all going over his head. He had no idea what we were talking about. We're all telling him, like, switch your unit of account, you know, like what are you doing trading a shitcoin? And all this stuff, and he's looking at us with like a blank stare, and we were just roasting him for like a solid 20 minutes. And it was absolutely probably one of the best moments that I had at the conference, just roasting this dude. Like, literally, Bitcoin Twitter in real life, just memeing a shitcoiner. It was so funny, man. Like, meeting Bitcoiners is awesome.
Greg is funny constantly.
Hilarious.
Hilarious. He never shuts off. It's great.
I just have a quick question for all of you. How many Bitcoin maximalists are there in the world? Because... Few.
I mean, I was joking, and that's a good question, because I forget who I was telling it to, but it was either like Nico or Winekiss or Justifer or something, or Neil, and I was joking like, man, dude, like all of the 1,000 Bitcoin maximalists and their sock puppets are here. So within that conference, there's something like, what, 12,000 Bitcoin or 12,000 people. And within that, the small subset was, you know, maybe 1,000 or 2,000, 3,000 tops, I would say, of like really solid Bitcoin maximalists. And so if you, you know, just take that statistics out into the world at large, I don't think it's that many, dude. Like, it's not a lot, but the amount or the quality of Bitcoin maximalists that are out there are second to none. You know, the maximalists that we do know and love are just straight badass humans. And if we can't change, you know, all this crazy shit going on, then there really is like no hope for humanity. But we are powerful people. We have charisma and character and personality. And, you know, to be honest, a lot of us are smart as fuck, even though we play like retards on the internet. Like, you know, we got it all going on. So even if it's a small amount, it's not about a quantity, it's about quality. And soon enough, I think people will become maximalists. Like, it's the smart way. It's the easy way. And it's the only way. And so I don't think it's as many as we'd think. But I think it's more than we'd guess, because I forget who I was telling, but it's funny to be a part of Bitcoin Twitter and kind of get caught up in the game and the shit posting and the fun. And then you realize that basically, you know, like 5 to 6 people can control the narrative and morph the narrative in people's minds. And as someone that was a part of like the Bitcoin cheese stuff that happened during the bear market, it literally doesn't take too many people to capture the imagination of Bitcoin Twitter. And, you know, it's a small group of people that are pumping and dumping a lot of these shit coins. And it's a small group of people that are the intellectual force amongst Bitcoiners. So it's the intolerant minority. And I think, I don't know if we've made it past the tipping point yet, but I don't think there's as many Bitcoin maximalists as we think. But again, like, I don't think it's a small number. There's a lot of quiet Bitcoiners out there that only stack, that aren't on Twitter. So I don't know, man. From the conference, it seemed like there was only a couple thousand out of the 12,000. But, you know, that's not all Bitcoiners. So I don't know, guys. What do you think? Is there... Am I on point, or is there more Bitcoiners out there that just are very good with their OPSEC?
Two stories.
Few. Shoot it.
I got a call today from a guy about a construction job. He works for a company. I worked with that company years ago. And before he even tells me about the job, the first thing he says, listen, I just want to say one thing. I want to thank you for telling me about Bitcoin a bunch of years ago. He tells me how he bought 4 Bitcoin for his 2 kids at 10,000. And he watched it go to 60, and he watched it go back down. And He's holding it for 20 years. He doesn't care. He doesn't. He hardly knows anything. It's probably still on Coinbase. I think he said it was. And I told him, all right, dude, then you need to get a hardware wallet. I got to teach you. He wants to go to a meetup. He's like psyched again because he's talking to me again. And he goes, I have to credit you. You were just so bullish. So that's one guy. That was just today. Then yesterday, or maybe it's 2 days ago, I was at over on Fire Island looking at one of my customers' summer houses that they rent. And I was told to go over there, and I see the people that are there renting. And I'm there. I tell them I'm there to look at some repairs that might need to get done. And they're just talking about how cool it is and how they're saving to buy a house of their own out on Fire Island. And I said, well, I'm not trying to get personal or anything, but have you considered saving in Bitcoin? And they said, what did you say? I said, Bitcoin? Do you know what it is? And they said, yeah, well, yeah, we have Bitcoin. Do you know much about it? And I go, oh, yeah, I know quite a bit, actually. And it was just really casual like that. Turns out these guys bought Bitcoin in 2013. They went through Mt. Gox. They lost money on Mt. Gox. They bought Bitcoin under $100. They still have a bunch of Bitcoin. They've been holding it. Nobody in their life gets it. They don't know nothing, like, other than, I mean, they understand Bitcoin totally. I talked about people in the industry. The guy totally know all these people that I was talking about. But they're not active in the community at all. Nobody knows who these people are. It's just two people that have had Bitcoin since 2013. And the guy says to me, after we talked for like an hour, we became like best friends. They want to come to meetups with me. I told them about the conference that I just got back. They were fascinated. They're like, holy shit, you know more than anybody we know. You must be the bullish person I ever met in real life. The guy was like, holy shit. I'm not kidding you, man. So that's like three people in a couple of days that are under the radar that totally into Bitcoin. One of them from way back. One of them from when I told them like 3 years ago, maybe. You know, yeah, I mean, they're out there. I think there's way more maxis out there than anybody really realizes. They just don't say a word. They're believing in Bitcoin. They may not even know much. Like, these people, none of them know that much. They just still believe. It's just that simple. They don't care. They don't care about knowing the technical stuff. They don't care about knowing the economics. They just know number go up, and that's all they care about.
Let's go. I'd agree with that. I 100% would agree with that. Anyone have thoughts on how many maximalists are out there?
I got a second what Jim is saying. I mean, there's people that are building out there. You know, we're out here. We out here making us, you know, beating our drum. And, you know, it's fun for us. But, you know, to be real, I think a lot of people just need a way to save for the future. And Bitcoin is, it fixes that. So they're out there building, and I hope to get to meet them all. Bitcoiners are the fucking best. So, yeah, shout out to them.
That was poetic, Christopher. Very poetic. Well, guys, I think we're pushing the hour mark, but I have one last question here. Well, we actually have a lot of questions and discussion topics, but I have this one last question that Jessifer brought up yesterday, and I think it couldn't be any more fitting, considering that we've all just encountered a lot of people in real life, and then yet we come back here and we still do the same thing. So the question that Jessifer put to all of us, and maybe he wants to give some context after I tell you what the question is. But the question is, what does it mean to be a Bitcoin pleb, and what's the relationship between plebs and devs? So, Jester, you want to give some context to this, or you want to, you know, give your thoughts on it? Because me and Jester were talking about this for a minute, and he was going off. He's like, man, I've been thinking about this for so long. And, I mean, Jester was on fire, and I was just like, dude, you already know what I think. But Jester, give them some context, and then we'll kind of go around. And, you know, you guys can talk about your experiences meeting plebs and if that changed how you view Bitcoin plebs or not.
Okay, so I went to a satellite, Jeremy Rubin's satellite event, you know, with tons of developers in there, and come and talk about Bitcoin's hive mind and all the different roles that people play. And So people were asking questions about, you know, toxic maximalists and then and Bitcoin evangelists, and they were asking about, you know, plebs and like the origin of, you know, pleb, like plebeian. And I would just love to hear people, you know, what it actually means to be a pleb. Maybe you're inheriting this system, and like maybe you're choosing, you know, what this protocol is that you're going to subscribe to.
I mean, I can't talk for everyone, but I can only talk for myself and my experiences. And to me, a Bitcoin pleb is just someone who's ride or die for Bitcoin. They understand that Bitcoin is the only thing that can really change the world. And they're out there, you know, they may not even be evangelizing it. They're just out there stacking. They're out there shitposting. But really, they're just average people that have fell in love with Bitcoin, and they stand by the ethos and the principles, and no one can shake that conviction from them. And, you know, we're just here trying to survive and make it through this great turmoil that we're going through, and they just don't give a fuck. They're unabashedly themselves. They can be loud, they can be quiet, they can be polite, they can be assholes, but they're them, and they're stacking Bitcoin, and they're going to continue to stack Bitcoin because they know number goes up, fix the money, fix the world, and they're all just fucking cool, weird-ass people, and they're the same as they are online as they are in real life. And I'm just bullish on Bitcoiners and Bitcoin plebs. And shout out to the devs out there, man, because they're working their ass off. A lot of them are a little more, you know, straight up, like a little more button tie type people, a little more intellectual and focused on the protocol. And shouts out to them. And we wouldn't be here without them. So there's definitely some people that straddle the line between being a pleb and a dev. And I don't really think there is a distinction, but, you know, some people like to put themselves in categories. But if you're here, ride or die for Bitcoin, you're going to continue to stack. Like, you're a pleb, in my opinion. If you don't think that you're more important than the Bitcoin network, you're a pleb. If you're not out here for the clout, you're just here to, you know, make friends, make relationships, and build a better world for yourself and your children and our children's children, then you're a pleb. So, you know, just continue to stack, continue to learn, continue to talk your shit, because you're a pleb, man. No one can tell you what to do. What's the point of having fuck you money if you don't say fuck you every once in a while? So shouts out to all the plebs out there. Shouts out to all the developers. And, dude, this shit's going to the moon. Like, let's go, dude. This year's about to get crazy.
Oof size large. Yeah. That's it.
Let's go.
Wait, you said something super important there, okay, at the end there. I mean, the whole thing was fucking, you killed it. But the end there was so important. The word clout, right? The word, you know, like, think like, okay, you stack Bitcoin. Doesn't matter how, you know, like you said, your personality, we're all weird as fuck. But, you know, as long as you understand freaks together strong, stay humble, stack sats, you know, and you're not in it for like fame or whatever, or like trying to get richer than the next guy, like stay humble, stack sats, make memes, build if you can't stack, like doesn't matter if you were a suit or not, like no one's judging you, man, as long as you're not watching realistically, and as long as you're not shitcoiner. Bitcoin, it takes a lot more effort to become a shitcoiner. You have to, like, learn about all this nonsensical bullshit, you know? And stack sad, say humble. Peace.
Get him.
That was, like, what kind of... Because, like, here as plebs, like, basically we're voting with our feet. You know, we choose which protocol, you know, we're going to operate on. Is Bitcoin. And some of us make the decision to say, I'm going to die on this hill and defend this protocol. But in attending that Jeremy Rubin satellite event of the conference, you know, like just talking, they had a VC conversation with all the developers there, you know, and open source protocols. I mean, those of you that went to the Open Dome, that place had no air conditioning. It was so fucking hot in Miami. And we're watching all of these open source developers that have no funding, like Suhaib, who's developing Ride the Lightning. Like, he's in there sweating. You know, I'm watching beads of sweat drop down his brow. And I'm asking him questions about, you know, this guy's so knowledgeable. I mean, he knows LND and he knows C Lightning. And it was incredible talking to him. You know, one of the smartest people that is volunteering his brain space to making really useful tools so that we all get to enjoy that. And so it's almost like an obligation for us to defend and support the developers that are call. So for me, it was a big call to action, saying we need that are selflessly doing this financial infrastructure, and they have a lot of they have a lot of decisions to be made. You know, there's trade-offs to every single line of code that they're going to implement, and us as plebs who can't code are going to be inheriting that, and we to make the best decision. And it's important to me for plebs to support and help them, you know, create the best financial future that and so we can feel comfortable saying, I'm gonna die on this hill.
Go off, King. Go off.
Bitcoin.
Yeah, I just want to add to that real quick, because I'm friends with Suhaib, because I see him in New York City all the time, and he's one of the most humble, nicest guys, really. And him and his wife, they're the ones that coded the whole Ride the Lightning software. And it's just, you look at how many platforms have adopted, it's amazing. Two people. He's got one third guy he mentioned the other day. But basically, people all over the world are using the software. This guy is just writing for free in his spare time. Mind-boggling what people do in this space. Super, super great guy. You should follow him at My2Sats on Twitter.
Well, shit, guys. I'm feeling the same love right now for all you guys that I felt in real life. And I just put it in the chat, man. I fucking love Bitcoiners. Bitcoiners give me hope. Bitcoin gives me hope, and I'm just excited to be along this ride with all you guys, because I look around and I see friends that I know will be lifelong friendships, and that just means so much to me. You know, like, you guys have been there through this whole journey, and this journey has just barely started, and I can't wait to see what the future brings, and I can't wait to hang out with you guys once again. And until then, dude, you know, we'll have to deal with our normie friends, with our normie conversations. We'll have to deal with the FUD. But at least we can come back here and have a home where our friends, our Bitcoin friends, our true friends, understand what's going on. We can reset ourselves, recharge ourselves, and get back to the work and get back to the fight. Because, like I said earlier, they're going to come hard for us. The FUD's going to come. And like I put it on my Twitter, you know, everyone's in wartime, and I'm like, man, this is still peacetime. Like, it's still peacetime optimist for me. So until we feel like a real war, you know, it's all shit posts and memes and number goes up. And, you know, to those working, you know, like, I'm ready to die on the hill, boys. Like, let's fucking go. This shit can't be stopped. and the end of this year is about to be extremely bullish, and I'm just excited. Weinekes, let's get a let's go. My voice
let's
is gone.
Fucking go.
Let's go.
Volcanoes, that's all.
Bitcoin volcanoes. All right, guys. Anyone want some last thoughts? Anyone need to get something off their chest? Wait, what was that?
Yeah, I got them last thoughts.
Get it. get it.
I don't know. I'm doxing people today. You guys told me to dox people today. Fuck it. I'm gay. All right, Satoshi Brainlove said something that inspired me. He said, defend and support. And so, you know, I think Matt O'Dell writes at StackSats, say, humble whoever made that up, I don't care anymore. Because Satoshi Brainlove says, defend and support, and then add to that StackSats and stay humble. That's my new mantra, baby. Oof. Defend and support, StackSats, stay humble, pleb life, Satoshi Brainlove out. That's Justifer, though. That's not me. That's Justifer.
Oh, let's go. Defend and support, stack sats, and be humble. By the one and only Thomas Justifer, BTC. Let's go, guys. Till next week. I love you all. Thanks for listening. Hey, and honestly, hold on. Shouts out to the people that came up to us and said they don't miss a teacher's lounge. Like, you guys are the real MVPs. We do this shit for you guys. We do this shit for you know, continuing the Bitcoin message. And, man, like, That was mind-blowing. That was heartwarming. So, guys, you know, people are listening to you guys. They love when you guys come out. They love the pleb talks. So, man, I think we're just going to have to go even harder on this and fucking double down. Because, dude, they're like, we got some love. Weinekes knows, like, we got some love out there. And Justifer knows. So, you know, shouts out to you guys listening. And I hope we, you know, do you justice, dude. I hope you're learning. I hope you're enjoying the content. And yeah, man, until next time, peeps, till we meet in the flesh. And until next week, this is Optimus Fields, and we're out.